No matter how many people you have on staff at your church, there's only so much you can accomplish in a day, right? Your church exists to serve the community, so the mission of your church and its staff is to reach as many people as you can. That's why productivity is essential for churches, as most of your church's success lies in its ability to lean into and leverage resources for optimum performance. And thankfully, our friends at Belay know this well. Belay, an innovative staffing solution with over 10 years of experience serving churches, has successfully matched thousands of organizations with part-time virtual assistants, bookkeepers, and social media strategists. That's why they're offering our listeners a free download of their resource, Church Leaders: Essential Strategies to Unleash Productivity. Let Belay help your church live its mission in your community by helping you juggle less and accomplish more. Just go to Belay. That's B-E-L-A-Y solutions.com/Lifeway for your free download.
Lifeway Leadership Podcast Network.
You're listening to the Group Answers Podcast, a weekly show designed to resource, train, and encourage small group leaders. Each episode considers current trends and resources, as well as timeless truths and methods of discipleship. It's hosted by Brian Daniel and Chris Surratt. Now, enjoy the show.
Welcome back to another episode of the Group Answer Podcast Show. I am Brian Daniel, and as always, and actually more than even me, Chris Surratt. So, Chris, here we are.
It's good to see you in person. I know this is a audio podcast, but we have not been in the same studio in over a year, I think, you and I.
Well, we tried that one time and technology let us down. That was
That's right.
3 weeks ago.
Yeah, we gave it a shot, but then couldn't record. But now we're actually sitting in the room, socially distanced, but in the same room, looking at each other. And just, it feels like we're back in business.
Hey, I wanted to ask you here, have you seen those TikTok Tom Cruise things? I think you said they were deep fakes. You have seen that?
I had not seen it until you showed it to me about 10 minutes ago.
What do you think about that technology? Is that not crazy?
I think it's amazing, and I think it's scary. The fact that, I mean, if you haven't seen this, our listening audience, it's a guy who did Tom Cruise talking to the camera just about something, a squint or something. So
it doesn't matter.
It's funny, but it is Tom Cruise. I mean, it looks like him. It sounds like him. And the fact that they can do that,
but it's not him.
No, it's not him. Think of the ramifications of being able to do that on a global scale. Take a North Korean dictator.
For instance,
and have him seemingly saying he just launched a nuclear attack against, you know, the United States or something, then we've got something.
Yeah. I mean, that's not what this show's about, but that is very relevant. And I don't think it's new. I think it's just new to me. Someone sent it to me last week while I was out, and I didn't have a chance to look at it until like last night. And I looked it up, and it was like, oh my goodness, I can't believe we can do this.
Yeah, we can do, let's try to make it group specific or related to groups. Maybe we can have our pastor now giving the study or the message, but it's not actually the pastor.
I'm guessing it takes a little bit of resources to pull off what that guy's doing. I don't know there's too many churches out there that are going to be able to pull that off, but who knows?
Well, a few years ago.
There are some very technologically advanced churches out there for sure.
Yeah, a few years ago, they said the future was hologram, like for multi-site.
This is better than that.
Yeah, like you could have Andy Stanley or Rick Warren on a hologram on the stage, but I think the creepy factor was just too much with holograms. This looks real.
What do we believe anymore?
I don't know.
All of this stuff, honestly, is just more of a case for the gospel. Not that more of a case was needed, but for the population at large, I think it just points to, because you really, I mean, it's hard to know what to believe that you get through the normal channels anymore, mm-hmm. for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, you certainly need to question everything, or at least scrutinize everything and vet it through and look at it from different positions, I guess, and perspectives before you come to any conclusions. But we digress.
Deep thoughts.
Deep thoughts.
You know what I'm more excited about today? The fact that baseball season is underway.
Yeah. Well, college basketball just wrapped up, so it's the next thing. I guess we've got some golf tournaments coming up that we missed last year.
Yeah, Masters are coming up, but just, I don't know, baseball. I get excited. I don't watch every game. I'm not one of those guys, but I just love the feeling that baseball is happening.
Well, I'm making the switch. I canceled Hulu and I subscribed to MLB.com so that I can watch baseball games this year. Mm. I don't know when I'm going to find time to do it, and I'm certainly not going to go out of my way, but I want to be able to watch baseball when I want to watch it. And so that's pretty cool. It's not that affordable. So I'm in.
Nice.
Yep.
Welcome.
All right. So the group answers show today, we're going to talk about couples, right?
Yeah. We're going to do maybe a little mini series here. Tips for leaders.
Great idea.
We haven't really done anything quite like this in a while. It feels like for the last year, we've kind of been sidetracked by the pandemic and ways that we can kind of work through it and around it. And not that the pandemic has gone away, but I do think we need to get back to maybe some of the basics.
Chris, it sure felt like it. I was in New York City last weekend, and it sure felt like the pandemic's gone away.
The fourth wave.
I'm just saying, it just sure felt like it.
Yeah. Well, we have optimism. But so we're going to do maybe a few shows on some tips. And so this is going to kick us off. Tips on how to lead a couples group. You've led a couples group for a long time, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I want to ask you here on the top of the show, though, how do you make a distinction between a couples group and like any other group? It seems like to me when we refer to small groups, most of the time, this is what we're talking about. Is that right?
Yeah, I would say probably the majority of small groups tend to be couples groups, but you do have singles groups. You have mixed at a lot of churches, so you'll have singles and some married couples, which actually our group that we've had over the last few years has been mixed. So we've had couples, we've had engaged couples, we've had singles who got engaged during our group. That's a whole different dynamic. And then we had married and just singles. So that's a whole smorgasbord of things going on there that makes leading just a little bit different. But most groups, I would say, are probably married couples groups.
That's what it seems like to me, particularly in the context that I've been. I think I would add to your list multi-generational groups.
Yeah.
Men's groups are out there. And then you've
single gender, yeah.
And then you've got kind of like your on-campus, off-campus divide as well when we talk about group life.
Yeah.
So this is specifically a group, then on the description, it says this is for couples.
It's probably a married couples group, more than likely.
What about those groups like I've seen them couched as nearly and newlyweds?
Hmm. This will count.
Okay.
Because it's couples. You have a lot of the same dynamics, especially if it's newly. Although I think there are some probably caveats to it a little bit that as you go through it. But I think the main principles that we're going to talk about apply when it's men and women in a group together. Even to some degree when it's a mixed group, when it's single women and single men in the group together.
And no real distinction with regard to age. So we're just talking about married couples together.
Yep, just married couples. They don't have to be old like you and I. They can be young.
No one asked for that.
They could be mid. Somebody did. Somebody asked for that. They'd like to know.
Somebody's wondering, how old are these guys? All right.
So I've got three tips, Brian. And let's see if you agree with these, if you've utilized these in your groups in the past. How's it gone? Maybe you'll disagree.
Oh, I'm sure of it.
We'll see how this goes.
I mean, I've seen them. So, I mean, we talked before this, so. I know it doesn't always feel like it, but we do show prep, guys.
We do a little.
We actually do that.
Occasionally. Yeah. So, basically, the problems that you'll run into when you have a couples group is being open and vulnerable for the group. And for all groups, you want to kind of get to that place where people feel like it's a safe place and they can open up and they can share their lives with the people around them and it'll stay in that place. And with a couples group, if you're staying together, men and women, it's just going to be really tough, especially for the guys to be open and vulnerable. And what I've seen in the history of my group leading, and most of my groups have been couples groups, is that the ladies or the wives are more willing to be a little bit more open and tend to speak for the couple more than the guys do. So if there's something that's a little bit more internal, vulnerable, the women are more likely to answer. Has that been your experience?
I would say more or less that's been the experience. I would say in my experience, I don't know that I've seen it as consistently as you apparently have. And I think it just, a lot of it comes down to just the vibe in the room, maybe how big the group is. I think you have led larger groups than I have. I've been in that 6 to 10, mm-hmm. with 8 being my sweet spot. And I think you've been in that 10 to 12 and even up some.
Yep.
I do think that figures into it.
That's true.
I wanted to ask you what you mean by, so unpack vulnerable here in this context for us.
Well, I think vulnerable can be a lot of things. It can be insights into past wounds, hurts that we're coming into. You know, I think a lot of guys feel like if they share that in front of everyone, they're going to be thought of as less than, weak and not strong. And so I think that that's vulnerable. And also there's some, you know, issues that come up in just married life. And I'm not talking about deep-seated issues that need to be talked with a counselor or with, you know, one or two other people, but just your normal things that go on in married life. I think men are less likely to want to reveal those as well. So I think those are kind of the categories I would put that in.
Yeah, I think vulnerable has a range here. And what you're talking about is more the journey that we've been on and where we've taken our hits and how we overcame them. And I think a lot of masculine perspectives on that will be along the lines of, what does that have to do with tonight? What does that have to do with the study of Psalms? And aren't going to work that hard to make that connection. The reason I asked you is because vulnerability also applies to like current state of a marriage, mm-hmm. or like finances or job security, parenting, all those things that man typically feels like he is responsible for.
Yeah. And I think it goes back to that. I'm going to be perceived as not strong, weak, not supporting my family in the way that I'm supposed to if I'm having job issues. And so there's a lot of, yeah, you're right. There's a lot of places that guys won't naturally go to with a group of people, especially if women are in that circle. And then the second issue that I see a lot of times with couples groups is that studies, the type of studies that they choose really matters. I have not seen studies that involve a lot of reading, a lot of homework, succeed in couples groups. Good example, I was leading a group years and years ago, and I think I've told this story before, but we decided at the time to do the book, The Prayer of Jabez. I don't know if you remember The Prayer of Jabez, but it was literally like 100 pages long. I think it was like
maybe
97 pages, and 18 of those were credits and
yeah.
Introduction. So guys, let's do this. It was the hot book. And so I put it out to our group, gave them a couple of weeks to pick up the book and be able to read it. Went into group that night to talk about it and looked around, and not a single guy in the group would make eye contact as I asked questions about the book. And what I realized was none of them had read it. And literally, if you've seen the book, they could have read it in the car on the way to group. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's really not that hard. But none of them had done it. So that kind of set in my mind that guys don't necessarily read anymore. And actually, there's studies that you can find that prove that. In 2016, a Pew Research Center survey noted that 32% of men versus only 23% of women surveyed said that they hadn't read a single book in the past year, which is kind of startling to me a little bit. Not a single book.
Yeah. So your counsel here is once you're in the group, if you don't feel like men are engaged, just roll with it. Is that what you're saying? And just understand that you're going to have about 1/3, 2/3 in terms of the group participation, but it doesn't mean that the men are disengaged. It just means that they're less likely to contribute.
Right.
And then when you're choosing your Bible study, just keep in mind, how much is this going to ask of both husband and wife in this regard, and just make decisions accordingly.
Exactly. So let's jump to that tip. That's one of the tips that I have on there for leading a couples group well, is choose the right kind of study. Like I said, if you're choosing a study that has some homework, maybe you're having to do some reading in between, or you're just doing a straight up book study, I think what you said is correct, Brian. Just understand that part of your group is not going to be as engaged as the rest of the group. So just keeping that in mind. So if you want the entire group engaged, look for those studies that just have a little less homework to them, maybe a little less to bring into the group to be able to engage the conversation.
So I think what happens here a lot of times is a couple is going to buy one book. Let's just call it the book, whatever the study guide is.
The book.
That's right.
Yes.
And they are going to share that book.
Yep.
And I can see even in my own relationship with Karen, if we've got the one book and I know Karen's going to do it, I would just rather her do it and just tell me about it.
Yeah, I've been there.
So I think that's part of what's going on. And yeah, I think this is the challenge, because, and I think we've seen it in some areas of our work, that couples are going to share a book and they're not going to buy two. And I think that represents a little bit of a transition over the past, couple of decades. Because I think it used to be very common for both individuals to have a book, and that's just not the case anymore.
Yeah. I mean, I think if you look back at some of the more popular studies from years ago, Experiencing God would be one of them. Some other ones, they had a lot of reading, a lot of homework, but it wasn't a big deal because it was just expected for couples to do it. But now I just think that's changed.
All right. With this in mind, as you're choosing your curriculum, so that's on the practical side. What about on the topical side? I mean, do you have any wisdom in terms of like approaching that decision as to what is the nature of the content that we're going to engage over the course of these 4 to 8 and sometimes even 12 weeks? Yeah. Is it more topically driven to appeal to both sides, or do you go just pure book of the Bible, more exegetical kind of thing? I mean, what have you picked up in that regard?
I think it depends on the type of group. I think for a lot of groups, especially if they're newer couples groups, something topical is a really good way to go. Something that may hit the felt needs of the group as a general rule. For instance, our group, when we first started our current group, we did the study Making Space by Jeff Vanderstelt, because we had a lot of millennials, some Gen Zers who were just maxed out at the time with what they were doing with their lives, with their work and everything else. And so we picked that, and that was a very engaging study for our group because everybody was walking through that issue. And so that was a good one. So I think anything that kind of reaches the felt needs of the group. But one thing I would encourage is having a plan, not just going one topic to the next topic to the next topic. Because what we'll find is we tend to stick with the ones that we're most comfortable with, the topics that, there's only so many marriage studies that we can do. There's only so many how to raise your kids studies that we can do. All of this. So having a plan, like a balanced discipleship plan, which you can find, I'll put the link into the show notes, but does push you outside of that comfort zone. So you're not just locked into this one area of study for the life of the group.
So I've been in a few marriage studies in my time, and I've led a couple, and they have been successful at varying degrees. Has that been your experience too? It's weird.
Yeah.
I don't know where I've landed on them. I think they're helpful. I think they need to be available for groups, but there's some certain notes that a marriage study needs to hit in order to really win in group life.
I have not done a lot of them, to be honest. I think I've done maybe one or two over the years, just because that's how I felt. I didn't find a marriage study that really hit all of us at the same place, and it just didn't engage our group like I thought it would.
Well, the last one we did was Love and More by John and Stacey Eldridge, and I liked those guys a lot. But what I ran into was it was just more of a trade book approach, and it wasn't engaging. So I think you just need to be mindful of these things when you're choosing Bible studies.
Yeah. I think what's great is if your church, your pastor does a marriage series, and you're able to kind of jump off of that. If your church does sermon-based questions, that's awesome, because you're experiencing it on Sunday. It's tailored for your church where you are, and I think that's the best way to go with marriage studies. All right. Another point that I would make that kind of speaks to the vulnerability and being open during group is utilize the power of the subdivide. And I came across this late. This was not something I've always practiced, but when I do, I really find that it's effective. And it's just what it says. It's taking the guys and putting them into a group, the ladies into a group. Maybe one takes the living room, one takes the kitchen. And it doesn't have to be for the whole group time. I like starting together, so we'll start together in a group. And then maybe for the discussion time, and not every week, but maybe once a month, we move into our separate groups. Or maybe the prayer time, we move into separate groups. But I just find that when guys are with guys, they're a little bit more open, and also it helps the ladies as well. And then coming back at the end as a group together. So I think the subdivide is a powerful tool to use when you have a couples group.
Okay, I agree with you. What has not worked well for me is the subdivide within the same group, because just wrapping up like one segment and then transitioning to a different room and everybody moving and picking up their stuff and then getting resituated has always felt just somewhat counterintuitive to me. What has worked is, and we've talked about it on the show before, is getting the groups together apart from that group time for a separate discussion that's a lot less, let's just say, formal. It's a lot more casual. It feels a lot more open and conversational, like in a public place. Like women, there's all kinds of places that seem to be more appealing to women. Like in where I live, it's called like the Chocolate Strawberry, and it's a place that has coffee and just like small plates, and that seems to really work for this kind of thing. And of course, men, a coffee shop or a lot of other places. So in terms of the subdivide, there's a couple of ways. There's probably more than two ways that you can go, but that represents two ways. Apparently, the subdivide within the group has worked well for Chris. What's worked better for me is just another time.
I agree with you. We've done both. And actually, over the last, especially with the pandemic, we've done more of the meeting separately without together ahead of time. And it's really good, which leads into the third tip that I've got, which is start micro groups. And I've discovered this during the pandemic, and I've talked about it on the show, but that's what our group did, is we started groups of men and women of three and four. And that actually became our group for several months. And I just found that it was effective. I found that we need natural places to find godly examples and mentors to follow, and that helps build that. I also think that transformation happens best when you have accountability. And so when you have those three or four people that are pushing you, they're asking you questions, that are following up the next week. And then also, I think it lends itself to being a little bit better when it comes to intergenerational. I think having an older guy in with younger guys is super helpful when it's a micro group. And I gave away that I'm an older guy now earlier, but that's what my micro group ended up being. It was myself and a guy in his late 30s and a guy in his late 20s. And it was great conversations. Really, really enjoyed it. So I think micro groups, although they're not brand new, we've talked about D groups before, but I think this idea of having a micro group that's not necessarily just for a certain amount of time, maybe it's more for a year or 2 years and you're doing more life together than just intense discipleship, I think it could be effective.
I think the differences we're talking about are subtle but distinctive. And I couldn't necessarily articulate it right now, but when we say micro groups, it feels more like the group has landed as a group, as opposed to being like a D group, which at times is coming together for a specific period of time or is an extension of another conversation. I wanted to ask you, when you did your micro groups, you said it was pandemic initiated, right?
Yep.
How did you don't lead all the micro, like you broke your group into smaller groups, but you don't lead all of those, right?
No, I have one micro group and then there's two or three other micro groups, but I'm not leading all of those groups.
So how do you direct or prep? How did you introduce that idea to your community?
For us, it just happened naturally. We just said that we can't all meet together because of the pandemic. We had gotten to where it was too cold for everybody to meet outside in the park, didn't have enough light, all of that. So we were like, well, we can either stop and do nothing, go to Zoom only, which has its pluses and minuses, or we can break into these three or four kind of micro groups. So it was a natural transition for us. And I didn't mean for it to be a more of a permanent thing, but it turned into that because it worked. It was a good experiment.
Okay. So I love the micro group idea. And I feel like that it is one of the gifts of the pandemic, if it can be said that there is a gift of the pandemic. I think we owe it to ourselves to look for positives, even though we all are very well aware of the negatives of the last year. But so I have what I would call a micro group. Here's my challenge, and mine is gender specific. It's all guys, and we meet every other Saturday, and I put together basically a discussion guide, and I just do that based on with my own resources because I haven't seen anything that really gives me what I would like to have. And so we just start with the text, and then we look at the theology that emerges from the text, and then we talk about the application. And I like to give background and just a little bit of a word study because men tend to like having context. It seems like that works. I'm like that, and I think you're like that. Here's the challenge. I wanted it to be small, and so I started with four people. But it's worked, and I've got guys that want to invite other guys. So now we've swelled to like six, and at some point, it's no longer a micro group, and you lose what you set out to have.
Yeah.
So I just wonder what you do there. Now I understand group multiplication and dividing it, and I guess that's our next step. But that's the thing with the micro group is if it's successful, then what do you do when it starts to attract other people because you lose the micro part of micro group?
Yeah. You gotta treat it like fight. Although yours is called a fight club, right?
Correct.
Number one rule of fight club.
Don't talk about Fight Club.
Don't talk about Fight Club.
Yeah,
I'm kidding. But yeah, I think that is something that is probably naturally going to happen and why we have to start with multiplication in mind. And with that, putting that in front of the guys, I'm great if you invite somebody, but we want to keep what makes this special. And that's, you know, three or four together. And so if we get five, six more, we're going to look at subdividing or multiplying into another group, but having that expectation up front that, yes, we would love for you to invite somebody to this, but we want to keep it as intimate as possible for accountability and for just what it was expected to be.
Yeah, because we've had, you mentioned Jeff Vanderstelt, and he talks about disciple, what's the term he uses? The discipleship environments, discipling environments, and life on life is one of the discipleship environments that he identifies. And that's what you're talking about with microgroup and with like in the Fight Club. So I think you just, I think at the end of the day, you just want to be sure you're being intentional and making decisions based on what you feel God has called you to do. So just to review, we're talking about couples and tips for leading a couple small group. And just keep in mind that there's not everybody is going to want to read. And men typically, if they're in the room with their spouse, are not going to be as, Chris, I think the word would be vocal or appear to be as engaged. And then just a couple of things. Utilize the power of the subdivide, start micro groups, and choose the right kind of study.
That's it.
Well, that's going to wrap it up for this episode of the Group Answer Show. Thank you for being with us. Anywhere you listen to the show, we would love to see ratings and comments. And of course, as always, we would ask you to subscribe. That way it hits your inbox and you don't have to go find it. So that's going to wrap up today's edition. This is Brian Daniel for Chris Surratt. Until we meet again.